Pollyanna. I'm not no Pollyanna.
Lady had stepped out and left her husband at home, and I had saw RuPaul had put on an orange wig and just easily step across the street and went into that man's house and was up in there an hour and a half and came back and that wig was on completely backwards. Now I'm not making no judgment, but if that other lady found out what's going on, ooh, it's going to be some wig snatch behind.
Look, you calling me, I don't look at you wanting me. Your girl is pissed at me, but it ain't my fault you like it. Yeah. Look, got me calling me,
hey.
Look, got me wanting me. Look, hating me, but it ain't my fault you like it.
I'm looking at you, and I can tell you're looking at me too.
Tell me what you wanna do.
Boy, it ain't no time for you to be acting shy.
I know you like what you see, and baby, so do I.
All right, it's a couple minutes after 9 o'clock at 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine, where for this next hour of programming, the opinions and views expressed are not necessarily those KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California Board of Regents. It's time now for Talking Animals, KUCI.
Do the birdland, that's what I always hear when you sigh. Never in my wordland could there be words to reveal in a phrase how I feel. Have you ever heard two turtle doves feel in two when they love? That's the kind of magic music we get from our lips when we kiss. And there's a weepy old willow, he really knows how to cry. That's how I cry in my pillow if you grew tired and just said goodbye. Lullaby a birdland, whisper low, kiss me sweet, then we'll go flying high in birdland, high in the sky up above. So sing me to sleep, rock me to sleep. Yep, Birdland.
That's music. From Ella Fitzgerald, alongside Duke Ellington and his orchestra, with a little tune called, there we go. Gotta have instrumental beneath the blabbing, don't we? Absolutely. Anyways, again, Ella Fitzgerald alongside Duke Ellington and his orchestra, with a tune called Lullaby of Birdland, as we slide into today's edition of Talking Animals on 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine. Streaming live, of course, on the internet at KUCI.org. And the whole enterprise, as you probably know by now, is broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'll be with you till 10 o'clock this morning with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. Right off the bat, I'd like to tell you for the next hour, you can reach us directly by phone at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI, KUCI, and I absolutely urge you to use that number. Call us at any point in the show. Don't be shy, I'm telling you, we love, love, love to get calls. You can also instant message us via AOL Instant Messenger. The screen name is Talking Animals. Other ways to be in touch slightly less immediately include emailing us at talkinganimals@AOL.com and checking out our website at talkinganimals.net. Again, that's right. It's .net, folks. Also, before I move on, I want to thank Serena Sharp for another stimulating edition of the Serena Sharp Show. And meanwhile, here at Talking Animals, primarily we strive to learn about animals and animal issues from our guests, from news items, from your calls, from assorted other sources. We're also here each week to celebrate animals through music, comedy, and other means. We aim for a reasonable balance of those elements, as you can readily glean by viewing our nifty website. And again, talkinganimals.net, where nearly every show we've ever broadcast is archived. But clearly the heart of the program is the interview we conduct each week with some notable inhabitant of some province of the animal world. Today, our guest is Dr. Catherine Marocchino, the founder and president of the Nikki Hospice Foundation for Pets, a nonprofit organization with a national scope that aims to provide hospice care for terminally ill pets as an alternative to the conventional path of euthanasia. This is a concept that's taking hold among a growing number of veterinarians in this country and perhaps other countries. We'll find out all about the genesis of the foundation, how the program currently works, and where it's headed over time when Catherine Maritino joins us in a few minutes here on Talking Animals. Meanwhile, it's time for our weekly look at items of interest in animal news. And I want to remind you of the phone number to join us on the show with your own comments and questions about animals, not only this week's animal news items, but also any other animal topic you'd care to discuss, announcements, observations, and, of course, any stories you might have spotted. That all would be most welcome at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. So turning now to interesting or important developments recently in animal news. Typically, these are local, regional, national, sometimes international animal stories of note that seem important to spotlight and, with any luck, to get your comments on and discuss. We also try to include a few announcements of upcoming events or activities, classes, etc., that you may want to pencil in on your calendar. So, that said, wait for it now. Let's talk turkey, as it were. Produced, as always, by the Talking Animals award-winning Rip and Read News Department, let's start right off with a news item that's, you know, hard to ignore. It's so hot that it's still being talked about, shown, etc. From New York, and right now I'm not necessarily talking about the elevated security alerts, although in a way this could sort of be comparable. Let's just read a quick item from, I believe it was AP. Headline, Tiger Safely Recaptured After Escaping Circus. After escaping from the circus, a white tiger alarmed picnickers and motorists in New York City on what for him apparently was a calm half-mile stroll through the urban jungle. The 450-pound animal named Apollo was safely coaxed back to his cage in Queens, but not before the sight of him on the Jackie Robinson Parkway caused a multi-car accident. The Cole Brothers Circus was cited for creating an animal nuisance. But nobody, other than, I guess, the cars in question, was injured, hurt. Nobody even shot a tranquilizer dart into the tiger, much less anything else happened to animal or human. So, I guess, well, to some other stories of late, that's not bad. Also, want to hit this one right off the top, just because, again, we always try to do good whenever we can, and I don't know if you ever heard about this story where a guy who, 80-year-old widower, was contacted. His dog was missing. He was contacted and had to pay a $10,000 ransom to get his mixed terrier back, a guy named Frank Compton. So I guess he went and met the guy where they were supposed to, and the guy just grabbed all the money, it was all in cash, and then left. And there was still no dog. Now, the good news, relatively speaking, is the dog did turn up, so Frank Compton has his dog back, but the money's gone. So, the cool thing, and the thing I want to alert you to this morning here on Talking Animals, is there is a fund that's now been set up to try to replenish that. Because he went right to the bank, took out $10,000, and I think by most accounts, including his own, I don't know that he really could afford that kind of financial hit. So, if you want to help Frank Compton, there is indeed the Frank Compton Fund, and you can send any kind of checks or monies to that care of the Central Sierra Bank, 87 Highway 26, Valley Springs, California, 95252. It's the Frank Compton Fund, care of Central Sierra Bank, 87 Highway 26, Valley Springs, California, 95252. All right, so I sent my check. I hope you will shortly. Got to talk about whaling. This got this item about a week or so ago. Didn't get to it last week, but I'm going to read at least some of it to you. The 57-nation International Whaling Commission is meeting in Sorrento, Italy, under pressure from a group of countries led by Japan, Norway, and Iceland to end the moratorium on commercial whaling. The number of countries in favor of lifting the ban is growing. Until now, anti-whaling nations led by the United States, Australia, New Zealand, and Britain have been the majority of the members of the International Whaling Commission. They have managed to keep an 18-year moratorium on whale hunting in place, but support to end the ban has been growing. In his opening statement to the International Whaling Commission's four-day meeting in Sorrento, Japan Commissioner Minoru Morimoto said his country has come to the end of its patience on the matter of the moratorium and threatened pull out of the commission if a return to commercial whaling could not be achieved by next year. The ban on whaling was imposed to prevent the extinction of a number of endangered species, but since its establishment in 1986, thousands of whales have continued to be killed. Norway has ignored the ban, while Japan and Iceland's whaling fleets have been allowed annual quotas of some species for, quote, scientific purposes. Opponents have said this amounts to nothing but commercial whaling in disguise. During the past decade, Japan, Norway, and Iceland have made significant efforts to convince other countries to back commercial whaling. Today, the 57-member International Whaling Commission appears divided down the middle between countries opposed to resumption of commercial whaling and those backing it. So, there's more you may want to find out online and register your opinions in the appropriate places, but that didn't sound good. That didn't sound good at all. And closer to home, but also something doesn't sound good. Headline, Grey Wolf may be removed from endangered list in East. Once nearly extinct, the grey wolf now roams the Great Lakes region in abundant enough numbers that it can be removed from the endangered species list for the eastern half of the country, the Bush administration said recently. Wildlife groups decried the proposal, saying that the federal government was wrong to consider the wolf recovered throughout the eastern half of the country when the only vibrant populations are in Minnesota, Michigan, and Wisconsin. Quote, this proposal puts the brakes on wolf recovery just as the species was starting to rebound, said Barry Braden, managing director of the Wolf Conservation Center in New York. The Bush administration official said the population of the eastern timber wolf, also known as the gray wolf, had exceeded the goals for recovery set when it was placed on the endangered list in 1972. That called for returning the numbers in Minnesota to earlier levels and reaching at least 100 animals in other areas for 5 consecutive years. The story goes on from there, but again, you want to check that out, register your opinion. Seems like premature at best. Much more locally now. We try to mention this periodically when these classes are offered. There's a woman named Connelly Thompson that we had on the show probably about a year or so ago who periodically teaches a pet first aid and CPR class under the auspices of the Red Cross. And there's another one coming up on Sunday, August 15th in Huntington Beach from 1 to 5 p.m. And the training includes a Red Cross certification, PAWS pin and first aid book by the American Red Cross, Health and Safety Services, and the Humane Society of the United States. So it's kind of approved and sanctioned by those folks and more. And again, instruction is by Connelly Thompson, who's a vet tech in at Saddleback Animal Care Center, and also Trina Stanford, who also works at that same facility, I believe. So to find out more, to register, there's a limited enrollment, so you may want to jump on this if it has any interest, but it's really cool. They cover a lot of ground. Your head is injured, choking, something's amiss, maybe they ingested something they shouldn't have, what to do and how best to do it. So you might want to call Trina or Tony Lee at area code 949-586-4250, and you can also call Susan Keyes, who's, I think, also handling enrollment, at 714-964-4537, or simply email Susan at suekey@socal.rr.com. All right, so that's first aid CPR classes on Sunday, August 15th in Huntington Beach, 1 to 5 p.m. And it's time now for our sort of mid-news, or more than mid at this point probably, animal quiz. It's a true-false question. And if you're the first person who calls in with the correct answer, you win your choice of a vast array of very cool prizes. That could be books, including Shirley MacLaine's book, co-written by her dog. We've got books from other guests. Shirley MacLaine hasn't been a guest yet, but we're hoping. Hoping either Shirley or the dog will at some point be a guest on Talking Animal. But books by other people who have been guests, Kristen von Kreisler, a cool show, book about her experience rescuing the research beagle and that whole tale. CDs, we've got cat toys and dog collars and T-shirts from various animal organizations and What else? We got endless stuff. I mean, I rattle off each week some or all of them. So, anyways, here's the question. If you get the, you know the answer, you call in 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. The first one who does so gets their choice of any of those prizes. And the same holds later when we get into Name That Animal Tune towards the end of the show. So, here's the question. A robin has almost 3,000 feathers. True or false? A robin has almost 3,000 feathers. True or false? 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. Got time for maybe a couple more news items, and then we'll get into the Comedy Corner, and then welcome our guest, Dr. Catherine Marachino. Let's deal with foie gras, should we? Shall we? In the next few weeks, members of the California Assembly are expected to vote on Senate Bill 1520, the bill that will ban the production and sale of foie gras in California. SB 1520 was passed by the full Senate as well as the Assembly Business and Professions Committee earlier this year, going further than any previous such legislation in the U.S. If passed by the Assembly, the groundbreaking legislation will ban the force feeding of ducks and geese to make foie gras, as well as the sale of foie gras produced by force feeding. Currently, the only known production methods of foie gras involve force feeding ducks and geese until their livers swell up to 10 times their normal size. Needless to say, the animals endure enormous suffering, and many of them die before the end of the force feeding cycle. So, what you can do, if you're a California resident, please contact your state assembly person as soon as possible and ask him or her to support SB 1520 to ban the cruel force feeding of ducks and geese to make pâté de foie gras. And if you need to look up the name of your state assembly person and his or her contact information, visit the California Legislative website or send an email to humanlines@hsus.org or call the Humane Society itself, headquarters at area code 202-955-3668. Again, spinning around from national, international, local, and anywhere in between, I guess. We're back to local. This is coming up this Saturday at the Lab right here in Costa Mesa on Barista there. They're presenting Pet-a-Porter, right? We love the wordplay, don't we? So it's a pet runway fashion show. Participants can enter their pets into various categories, including best costume, most fashionable, and the owner pet look-alike contest. Admission is free, and the show runs from 3 to 5 p.m. And that's at the Lab, 2930 Bristol Street, Costa Mesa. For more information on that, you can call 714-966-6661. And I guess lastly for today's animal news item, we'll get back to some other items later if we have time. But Paul McCartney is performing without wings, or thighs, or drumsticks. Again with the wordplay, all right? That's just part of the Rip and Read Talking Animals News Department. That's just their bent, I guess. But anyways, crew members on the set of the singer's concert are up in arms because the staunch vegetarian has banned the eating of meat by anyone working on the tour. Quote, it's completely crazy when working in Oslo, Norway, where the former Beatles performing, was performing when this was written, told the paper Aftenposten. According to our translator, we're supposed to work from 8 until 8 each day and aren't served anything but salad and vegetarian food. I can't live without meat doing this kind of work, and will defy the ban and bring my own lunch packet with meat. According to another local report, the crew is also forbidden from wearing leather belts or shoes. We can't control what they do in their spare time, a spokesman for the concert organizers told the Aftenposten. For as long as they're inside the stadium area, it's correct that they are banned from eating meat. All right, well, your thoughts, your comments, 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. Again, we can also communicate by way of AOL Instant Messenger. Screen name is Talking Animals. And, of course, if there are ever any news stories or announcements or events you'd like to bring to our attention, please feel free to email us those items at talkinganimals@AOL.com. We'd also love to encourage you to email us with any comments about the show, suggestions of future guests, ideas about animal songs, comedy bits, and any other animal topic that's on your mind. That email again is talkinganimals@AOL.com. And please remind you, it might be redundantly so, but what the heck, about the Talking Animals website. We hope you'll check out the site, talkinganimals.net. Again, it's .net. And sign up for the email list so we can keep you posted on upcoming guests and other announcements. You'll also find archives and synopses of all the shows, assorted photographs and articles, all kinds of links, other audio pieces, and more. So please stop by and take a look around. The site again, it's talkinganimals Animalcomedy.net. It's time now to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which as always, of course, involves animal-oriented comedy. This is Ellen DeGeneres with a piece called Cat and Heat on today's Comedy Corner here at KUCI.
I personally, I like cats more than dogs. How many people by round of applause like cats more than dogs? Me too. How many people like dogs more than cats? Me too. I have a cat that is in heat right now. You ever had a cat in heat? They just change on you. She's my kitten, my adorable little pet that now is a hooker. She's wearing makeup. I went into the bathroom the other night. She's putting on mascara tonight. Won't be just in la la. Mm-hmm. She didn't know the whole song. Mm-hmm. She knew some of the words. Mm-hmm. She's an indoor cat, but male cats know she's in there somehow. They're just all around the house, and somehow she's sneaking out because the other morning I found a stamp on her paw. Yeah. I wouldn't have noticed. I just bought this new black light, and she passed right under it. Hey! What is that? So these male cats, they are sneaky. They're trying to get in for... They're just... The other day, one of them disguised himself as a UPS man. Yeah, the truck, the packages, everything. But I'm not falling for that, you know. The suit was just hanging off of him. Just... Little name tag said Fluffy. Oh, right. I will not sign here, Scoot. Driving off all mad in that big truck. Stripping the gears. They don't know how to drive. Cat. Came back the next day as a cable repairman. Same outfit. Little butt crack hanging out this time. So he fooled me. I let him in. I caught on. But he got Nickelodeon for free. He hooked that up somehow. So to see all the old shows. Boy, when cats mate, they just mate. They don't care where they are, what time it is, how loud they are, who they're with. Wouldn't that be great? That is... But then you compare it to, like, I was watching the Discovery Channel, and penguins are monogamous for life. Penguins mate for life, which doesn't really surprise me that much. They all look exactly alike. It's not like they're going to meet a better-looking penguin someday. Even if they are cheating, how do you know? I think that's me he's with. Sandra, doesn't that look like me?
All right, that's Ellen DeGeneres here on Talking Animals on KUCI. That was a piece called Cat and Heat, taken from her CD entitled Taste This. The Comedy Corner is, of course, one of the signature features of Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and you're indeed listening to Talking Animals on KUCI 88.9 FM. Broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. As many of you know, we also stream live on the internet at KUCI.org. Some of you, no doubt, are listening that very way. And some of you, perhaps, arrived through our small website, TalkingAnimals.net. Before we proceed, I'm obliged to remind you that the opinions and views expressed in Talking Animals are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California Board of Regents. All right, early in the show I mentioned that this week's guest is Dr. Catherine Marachino, the founder and president of the Nikki Hospice Foundation for Pets, a nonprofit organization with a national scope that aims to provide hospice care for terminally ill pets as an alternative, at least initially, to the conventional path of euthanasia. So there's much more to the story, of course, but we should get it from Dr. Marichino herself. So let's remind you of the phone number to join us, 949-824-5824, as we welcome Dr. Catherine Marichino to Talk Animals. Are you there, Catherine?
Yes, I am, Duncan.
And should I call you Catherine or should I call you Doctor? So far I called you both in leading up to this interview, and I want to make sure I'm doing the right thing. So
absolutely. Catherine would be perfectly fine.
Okay, great. Well, in mentioning to our listeners, you'd be our guest today, I gave sort of a quick, maybe, slightly glib description of the Nikki Hospice Foundation for Pets. So right off the bat, I think it'd be great and helpful to get your description of what it is and how it works.
Yes, definitely. Thank you. The Nikki Hospice Foundation for Pets, and I could, of course, go into a little bit of the history, but perhaps first I should tell you what its main purpose is.
Sure.
Is primarily a resource, a clearinghouse, if you will, for the general pet-loving public. And the idea is to allow folks in just about every part of the country, because we are nationwide, to locate, if possible, what we call a hospice veterinarian in their area. In other words, someone who is willing to offer them palliative care in their home if they have an animal who is terminally ill or geriatric or, let's say, facing a terminal condition. Mm. And they do not necessarily want to go the traditional route of aggressive treatment and or possibly fairly instant euthanasia.
Mm-hmm.
It is difficult, of course. It's a revolutionary movement, that very new, slow-growing, very much like human hospice was, of course, years ago.
Sure.
And it is going to take a while before we have a database that is expansive enough to cover the entire United States. But we're slowly getting there. We're getting many, many more vets on board. We've generated quite a bit of interest, of course, from both veterinarians, but primarily, I think, from the public. Folks who are realizing that their pets are very much family members or children, if you will, and they are looking to make their final days a bit more comfortable. Sometimes the animal is elderly, and would it be subjected to radiation treatment or chemo, there could possibly be a very lengthy and perhaps painful period during which the animal might not necessarily recover. And many of these folks really would like to do for their pet what many of them may have done for their Aunt Mary or Uncle Jim,
mm-hmm.
and that is put them in a hospice care program where ideally your veterinary hospice team not only has a veterinarian who is able to make house calls and, of course, have 24/7 care, backup care, if you will,
mm-hmm.
Veterinary technicians who at any time can come into the home and help the family, explain to them what to do. This is very important. They do have to explain to the family how to administer the medication, how to dose it, if any dressings need to be changed on a wound, if there's any bleeding, what to expect as the various stages of death approach, and try to keep the animal comfortable. And, of course, the main thing is pain management. Can they give the animal medication to keep it comfortable in its final days or hours or weeks, as the case may be? We also want to make it clear that there needs to be some type of mental health professional, perhaps a grief counselor or maybe a hospice volunteer who has some pastoral counseling training, to basically help the family unit. And we want the family, including the children, to be with the pet during these final moments, to help them through the hospicing experience. And, of course, those who have been through it with people realize that it is extremely gratifying and very rewarding, but it's not necessarily for everyone. It does take a bit of commitment on the part of the primary caregiver especially.
Wow.
But in a nutshell, Duncan, that's really what it is.
Okay, well, boy, that gives us a lot of info, and I think in the course of that you might have answered a good handful of questions I had dreamed up, which is great. But let me actually, if I could, go back a little bit, just because I think it's probably important to talk about what prompted you to start the foundation and, of course, the namesake, and maybe we can proceed from there and cover some other ground as well.
Absolutely. Back in 1996, we had a black silver mackerel tabby named Nikki, who was 13, and she had been diagnosed with terminal chronic, if you will, and then terminal kidney failure.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not a good situation. Our veterinarian had taken x-rays, found some masses in both the liver and the stomach. He was trying to address, however, the kidney failure primarily, and began her on fluid therapy. But it didn't do anything for her. She was getting progressively worse. He suggested that we take her to an emergency clinic, which probably was going to be able to continue the fluid therapy, but on a 24/7 basis.
Mm.
And this was something that his clinic was not, at that time, equipped to do. At the time, I think we were not even envisioning hospice care. It never entered my mind because I don't think we realized how final and how terminal this eventually was going to be.
Sure.
But we did have a very, very bad experience at the emergency clinic. Within a matter of days, the fluid therapy not only did not work, but she had started bloating. She was retaining fluid. Her blood had started clotting. It was not a good situation, and she was having labored breathing.
Mm.
And they were very, very strongly advocating instant euthanasia, and I was treated rather roughly, ended up telling them I was going to euthanize, but took her away with the intention of going to my vet to have him do this.
Mm.
And once I got to his clinic, I said, there must be something more that we can do. He suggested Davis, UC Davis. We did take her there.
Mm-hmm.
And we were eventually even toying with the idea of dialysis as a last resort. And I'm sure that, you know, it could perhaps have worked had her situation not been so drastic.
Yeah.
And as the days went by, again, the fluid therapy was not working. They had her on a respirator at some point, and it didn't look as if the situation was going anywhere. I was told that had they tried dialysis, they would have had to thin her blood one day, dialysis the next, blood thinning the next, and it would have alternated for perhaps weeks.
Mm.
It would have been very costly. We were not at that time concerned with the cost. She was very dear to us.
Of course.
We didn't spend anything to help her and to save her.
Sure.
But I think the prospect of
putting her through that.
Oh, it was a terrible scenario.
Yeah.
We would have had to anesthetize her, tube feed her, put her on the respirator. She had, you know, tubes everywhere.
Yeah.
And we really didn't think that the prognosis was going to be very good. Mind you, we're still looking at the masses in the stomach and the liver, which probably would have turned out to be tumors.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, we were told that really there was no other alternative except for euthanasia. She was euthanized there on this very cold steel table. It was a very impersonal experience. It was extremely traumatic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my husband and I came away from it with the idea that there had to be something more that we could have done for her.
Yeah.
Could she have been at home? Could she have been kept comfortable? And I remember that when I even broached the subject with several people, they looked at me in a very strange way. No, of course not. You know, she's going to go into cardiac arrest, or perhaps she was going to have breathing problems, and you certainly don't want to see that. There didn't seem to be a mindset that accepted the idea that there was something else that could be done. It simply did not exist as a concept.
Sure, we've always done it this way, and that's the way we do it, right?
And
yeah.
You know, yeah. The kindest thing that basically you can do.
Yeah.
And when all of this was over, I made the decision that I had to put something together that would allow pets to have companion animals, if you will, to have the type of resource and care in their final moments that humans have through human hospice. And I began doing some research. I was fortunate enough to discover a veterinarian in New Hampshire who ironically was married to the director of a human hospice program. And he had been literally practicing hospice for pets for years. And I connected with him. In fact, I invited him to become the first advisory board member of the organization that later became the Nikki Hospice Foundation for Pets. And I remember distinctly hearing him tell me, had I been there, I would have been able to give you hospice care. Yes, we do know how to do it. You could have taken her home. She could have been comfortable. It is not a painful situation. She probably would have passed away in a couple of days, but it would not have been the trauma that you all had to go through.
Wow. And what,
so
is, it, what
awful,
is it?
But, you know, it was something that needed to be said.
Of course. And what's this doctor's name?
His name is Eric Clough.
Mm-hmm.
That's Clough. And Dr. Clough is now retired.
Mm-hmm.
He did work at the Mary Mack Clinic for quite a few years. He continues to be one of our main resources for hospice care. Very often when I get a call from someone in a city or a state who does not have a hospice veterinarian close by, I tell them to get their vet to connect with Dr. Clough.
Mm.
And he is actually able to provide them with networking and very resourceful information by phone that often persuades the veterinarian to give this hospice idea a a shot. Just try it. You know, this is
sure.
the pharmacology that will work. And we have been able to help tremendous numbers of people actually get hospice care in this manner.
Wow, that's great. I want to remind our listeners that this is Talking Animals on 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine. And we're speaking with Catherine Marachino, founder and president of the Nikki Hospice Foundation for Pets. You can join the conversation, if you'd like, by calling us at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. So, Catherine, so obviously now people, the word's out, people are contacting you, because I was thinking initially, maybe even still now, I mean, are you still running into kind of an array of reactions to the notion of hospice care for pets, just based on, again, what we talked about a moment ago, of how, you know, for so long, hey, this was the way it's done, why would you do hospice care? I mean, some must immediately embrace it, of course, but do some think it's a bit, you know, just weird, or do some wonder about the practicality and cost?
Yes, a very good question, Duncan, and I think one that needs to be answered very clearly for your listeners. I think one thing that we need to keep in mind, and this is something I would like to really emphasize,
mm-hmm.
is that throughout the entire hospicing experience, which could last literally from a few hours to perhaps months, depending on the situation and the age of the pet and the condition, euthanasia per se always continues to be an alternative. In other words, if at some stage of this hospicing experience, the family members, the primary caregiver, feels that the animal is perhaps becoming comatose, perhaps the pain medication has put them in such a sedated state that I don't think he's aware of my presence. You know, he looks like he's peacefully sleeping, but I don't think he even knows we're here.
Mm.
I feel that it's time for me to let go. I now will call the family, and we're going to hug him and hold him and say goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
They have a right to ask their veterinarian, their hospice veterinarian, to come to the home and actually euthanize at that point. So that continues to remain an option for people who have pets. And, you know, we don't want people to think this is necessarily taking the place of euthanasia in every single instance.
Sure. It's delaying.
It may not.
Right. It's finding either a slower or a more, you know, reasonable for all parties concerned path to what may still indeed land at euthanasia.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. In fact, I think the key to this, and this is one of the things that we mention in our brochures when we inform people of the program, we are actually hoping that people will find a way to take advantage of that quality, meaningful time that they can still have with their pet, relatively manage the pain in a good way, but still get weeks, sometimes even months, and in some cases I've had people tell me even years of good living with their pet before the actual euthanasia decision is made.
Wow.
And I think this is a godsend for people who very often have been faced with traditional veterinarians who are very, very much dead set on the idea of euthanasia almost at the moment that an animal is diagnosed as being terminally ill.
Sure.
And I've had people tell me, I walked into the clinic, they told me he had a tumor, and I really, really want to emphasize this. I hear people tell me I was coerced into euthanizing before I even had a chance to leave the clinic. And 30 years later, these people do call us in a state of grief, and their cry, if you will, is,
sure.
where was pet hospice, you know, years ago when I could have used it?
Yeah. And are there particular diagnoses that you found that seem to more predominantly lend themselves to hospice care, or is it kind of really a huge array of you know.
I would say, just like with human hospice, it's really a huge array.
Mm-hmm.
Frankly, most of the people that we get calls from do mention something in the oncological realm. So we're talking tumors, we're talking cancer.
Sure.
That have invaded a specific part of the body. But by and large, and I mean this very sincerely because it is quite true, any situation that becomes terminal or where the prognosis is very, very poor,
mm-hmm.
and the family has been told, you know, this is not going to go away, you know, this is going to get progressively worse until the animal will die. Any of those situations lend themselves very, very well to hospice care. In fact, I've had hospice veterinarians on our board who have told me that they have never run into a case where they have not been able to do pain management for that particular pet and keep it comfortable. And I think this is crucial for people to know. As with human hospice, I think the fear is, am I going to be in pain, or can they give me something that will make me feel good, feel better, where the pain will be managed? And quite frankly, if you do know your pharmacology, it isn't very difficult to do hospice for pets. we are very, very pleased to be able to say that, yes, the pain can be managed. Duncan, I think veterinarians who want to get on board with this program really need to be what Eric Clough calls proactive.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be willing to mix and match medications until you find the right cocktail, if you will, that works for that particular pet. But it is doable, definitely.
And if that, in terms of just the mechanics of that aspect of hospice care, leaving aside for a moment the, just the emotional and other aspects, is that kind of then the biggest challenge? I mean, it sounds like part of your program is sort of, you know, making sure that there's very close supervision and instruction, at least initially, between veterinarian and maybe vet techs and that pet owner. But I would think that some of this would be daunting when you talk about administering pain medication, and now you're talking about sort of finding the right mix. Is that one of the reasons that people maybe are a little reluctant to go down this path? That just seems a little too scary or unnerving?
Actually, no.
Oh, good.
The medication normally, once the doctor has found or is suggesting something that, that he thinks will work, and
mm-hmm.
again, mind you, doctors like Eric Clough, who've been doing this for quite some time, really have a plethora of medications at their fingertips, and they really know what to do because they know that by experience this has worked very well
sure.
with other animals. And so they're quick to step in and say, this is what I'm going to give you, this is what we're going to start the pet on, and you know, if there need to be any changes, we will do that accordingly.
Yeah.
But the medication is actually fairly easy to dispense. Most
I see.
Of the time, the animal has a catheter inserted. There may be an IV. The family is instructed in what to do if it becomes dislodged. Eric Clough, I know, used to send his families home with injectables that were pre-prepared.
Mm.
And it was almost, Duncan, it isn't any more difficult than testing yourself for your blood sugar level if you're a diabetic.
Yeah.
It's that simple.
Oh, that's good. So then people really do get comfortable with it, and all the things that maybe would raise their anxiety levels are pretty much addressed from the get-go, it sounds like.
Yes.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
It is very crucial for the doctor, and Eric Clough is very good at doing this, to instruct the family on what to expect as death approaches.
Yeah.
And remember, again, there are some people who, for religious reasons, their own convictions, their deep sense of spirituality that will not allow them to embrace the idea of ending life in any form or fashion, who want to take the hospice experience to the very end, just like they did with their human relatives, and they do not want to euthanize. And
yeah.
the good thing is that if you have the right medication, most of these animals are extremely peaceful, and their pain is managed, and very quietly, most of them pass away in their sleep, quite frankly, which of course is a godsend to the family.
Of course.
Looking for.
And Catherine, what are the typical costs involved from setting up and providing hospice care for a pet? I mean, I'm sure, again, it's different from illness and case by case, but I mean, that again would seem like a key issue for people who are considering this approach.
Absolutely. We have heard people tell us that they will spare no cost, you
mm-hmm.
know, to help their pet. Eric Clough, who did this for years, actually had informed me, and we had this conversation several times over the past few years, that if it's done properly, and mind you, this is crucial, unlike humans who are capable of vocalizing and saying, you know, I have this pain in my right side, and
sure.
they find out, you know, that they maybe have 4 or 5 years to live, but, you know, there's still some time. With pets, we tend to discover that there's something wrong when, unfortunately, it happens to be in a relatively late state. So hospice doesn't necessarily go on for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, costs, I have to tell you, are very individual. It really depends
yeah.
on what the veterinarian wants to charge. We, of course, and this is a legal matter, have no control even in terms of suggesting, you know, what comparable or even affordable rates would be.
Sure.
So that is something that the client needs to determine with their own doctor. But the good thing is, just to give you a ballpark figure, if
mm-hmm.
you did this for a couple of weeks, it wouldn't cost you more than a couple of $100 to be able to cover the cost of the medication.
Wow.
Keep in mind that you're not bringing the animal to the clinic, so you don't have visits.
Those
anymore.
Costs, right.
So costs are actually reduced. What we have found is that often people who have elderly animals are somehow told that if they do go for the more extensive, more invasive treatments such as chemo or radiation, and now that becomes very costly,
yeah.
the animal perhaps will make it. You know, we're going to be able to give them a couple more months here. And the family is saying, you know, we don't want to put him through that. This is too painful. He's already had 3 operations in his life. He's 14. And no, you know, they're
yes.
putting their foot down and saying, we do want to keep him at home and keep him comfortable, but we do not want to go that route. And there, if you start comparing costs, hospice care is going to be considerably less costly
sure.
than it would be, you know, if you went in for 10 different radiation treatments.
Sure, absolutely. All right, I mean, it looks like we might have a call here, Catherine. Would you like to take a call from one of our listeners?
Absolutely,
okay.
I would love to.
Great. All right, well, maybe they'll call back. But I want to let our listeners know we are sort of running just towards the end of our time together, Catherine, but I want to, for one thing, for sure, mention the website, which I think is really important. It's www.csum.edu/pethospice, and you can find out a lot of what we're talking about and a lot more, really, in terms of some of the referrals and the database that you mentioned that you guys are developing, which I think is going to be really, fantastic resource for people. And I guess it's interesting because what you said a moment ago too really struck me is that I guess again, like as in with humans, it's a lot of this would be really dictated by how early on the diagnosis would be made. I mean, it sounds like, and maybe I just infer this, but in the case of Nikki, it sounds like things went very fast from the time she was diagnosed.
Oh, yes, yes. Quite frankly, it was about a week.
Yeah, which, I mean, so obviously, I guess you guys had no inkling that she was having that kind of kidney failure, and then it just sounds like a huge, barreling train once that diagnosis was made.
Yes. Yes, that was in fact the case. We were very careful about monitoring her behavior, and if we noticed anything unusual, we would actually, instantly take her to the vet.
Sure.
And the most devastating thing about this is that we did not notice absolutely anything wrong with her.
Mm.
Yes, she had started, I'd say, the day before this episode, urinating much more frequently, but then it seemed to have stopped. She was trying to urinate, but she couldn't.
Mm.
And that's when she alerted us. I got up very early that morning, and I found her on my doorstep just meowing very loudly.
Wow.
And to me, that was, please help me, take me somewhere, because I don't know what to do. And from that moment on, when they started doing the treatment and the tests and running the x-rays, everything sort of came together as a cluster.
Wow.
And very often, this is the scenario that you are going to see with most pets.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, we do have another call here, Catherine. Would you like to take that? Let's see if we have it.
Absolutely.
Hi, you're on the air live on KU Science Talking Animals with Catherine Marachino.
Yes, I have a question, please.
Yes, please go ahead. Thank you.
Hello. I found this very interesting. I was wondering about what your experiences are with people's very busy lives and having to leave their pet in these conditions at home, let's say if nobody else is around. Could you tell me a little bit what you've encountered along those lines?
Yes, thank you for asking. This is very crucial. The veterinary hospice team, ideally, and mind you, this is a situation that has to be looked at, individually in every case. This is the ideal scenario. We ask that hospice volunteers who work in human hospice programs make themselves available to veterinary clinics to be able to help the family. Now, what I have encountered in my particular area, and I'm speaking about Vallejo, California, is that we have a number of people calling us looking for respite care. I need to run to the store, to pick up some items, but I don't want to leave my cat with this IV by himself because he could move, it might get dislodged. What am I going to do? My husband's at work, my kids are at school, and what really needs to happen ideally is that friends and volunteers, very often in the local community, step forward and say, we are willing to help these people. Maybe we'll run the errand for them while they stay home, or we can actually pet sit. And one of our objectives, and by the way, I'm also addressing this to you, Duncan, the website is going to be in a couple of months completely recreated. There will be a new one with expanded databases.
Oh, great.
And one of the databases that we'd like to see is that of pet sitters, volunteers, and respite caregivers in a particular area that you can then, not only have you connected with a veterinarian, but then you can go to this other database and find someone, preferably in your city or close by, who can actually come to the home and help you with that type of care.
Wow, that's great.
Oh, that's so comforting. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
And Catherine, that sounds fantastic. Will the website address remain the same, or will it change as the website itself changes?
Actually, that whole website, Duncan, was a student project. And my students at the California Maritime Academy, where I teach in Vallejo, actually had created that for me. We are going in a few months to have our own domain name, which is going to be pethospice.org.
Okay.
And people don't need to worry because the old website will automatically just
refer
bring you over to the new one.
Sure, sure. Well, that's great. But again, I think since we are just nearing the very end of our time here, Catherine, we do want to, again, mention the website because people should go there now and then, you know, regularly, whether it ends up on the current site or the modified one. So again, it's www.csum.edu/pethospice. And we might have time for another quick question. Let me just ask you this, though. Kind of, are there? It sounds like there's some very specific things, that are going to happen in the near future. Are there specific objectives for the foundation in the next 6 to 12 months? I take it the key focus will be building that database of vets and then again caregivers and others that will help out. Is that kind of the primary focus for the short term?
Duncan, to be honest with you, we are extremely ambitious and
yeah.
We have grandiose plans for the future. We've been working on this for some time.
Sure.
Our board members and our advisory board members, and these are psychologists, mental health professionals, veterinarians, we do travel around the country talking about hospice at symposiums, veterinary conferences, any association that is connected with hospice care or with death and dying. We are busy writing articles that get published around the country in different pet publications and even newspapers and national magazines to promote the idea. We want to work very closely with pharmaceutical companies and those who are on the cutting edge of developing new pain management medication. And we also want to strive to give talks to veterinary universities and try to explain to them how crucial it would be to insert hospice courses into their curriculum.
Wow.
So
there's ambitious.
Several things out there.
Yeah, well, that's a lot of stuff. Well, Catherine, I really, really appreciate it. This was really fascinating, and I think obviously, a lot of our listeners really are going to be helped by this, you know, now and later. So we'll just thank you again for joining us today on Talking Animals and wish you luck. And, of course, we'll check back in a time and maybe get an update on how things are going.
Absolutely. And, Duncan, if I may very quickly, people are certainly welcome to go to the website, but I also wanted to mention that if they want to call our number, which is a 24-hour hotline, it's probably the easiest and quickest way to get a hold of us if they have an emergency.
Oh, that's great. What is that number?
This is the number, of course, that you called me on.
Okay.
And it's 707 557 8595.
That's great.
And they can call any time.
Excellent. Well, that's really an amazing service to provide as well. So, Catherine, again, thank you so much. Good luck. And we will check back in a few months' time and kind of see how it's all going. But it sounds like you guys are really on a great path and doing great work for animals and the people who love them. So.
Well, thank you, Duncan. I appreciate the opportunity to have been on this show and to have spread the word to so many people.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Bye-bye
you.
Now. All right, again, we want to thank Dr. Catherine Marichino for joining us today. The website for the NICI Hospice Foundation for Pets, at the moment at least, is www.csum.edu/pethospice. And again, the phone number she gave is area code 707-557-8595. So I'm Duncan Strauss. You are listening to Talking Animals on KUCI and Irvine, 88.9 FM, streaming live on the internet at kuci.org. It's time now to proceed quickly to name that animal tune. Again, it's pretty much like any version of Name That Tune you'd care to mention, except that in this game, the tunes are always animal-related. So I'll play a snippet, and there'll be a prize. That's right, we talked about the prizes earlier, but you'll have a choice of a prize if you're the first caller who correctly identifies this song. And as soon as you recognize the animal tune, please call us, 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. All right, get started. And I've been asked a bunch of times why this hasn't been a Name That Animal Tune selection so far. So what the heck? We're going to bite the bullet, and we're gonna give it a shot. So it's Name That Tune on Talking Animals here on KUCI. Can that really be happening on KUCI? Well, just briefly. Just briefly. Just long enough for Name That Animal 10. So, anyway, I'm Duncan Strauss. We have reached the end. If you do know that one, though, call 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. I want to remind you that the views and opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those. KUCI, UCI, or the University of California Board of Regents. I want to thank again our guest, Dr. Catherine Marichino, and remind you that the website for the NICI Hospice Foundation for Pets is www.csum.edu/pethospice. And again, the phone number if you want to call more directly and get help, already seem to misplace that, but it's 707-557-8595. I want to thank you all for listening and for the caller that joined us on the show today. Hope you'll join us next week on Talking Animals when our guest will be Rob Laidlaw, who's both director of ZooCheck Canada and project manager for the World Society for the Protection of Animals. So there'll be plenty to learn and talk about with Rob, and we'll hope you'll join us for that on Talking Animals next week, Monday, August 9th. By the way, other public affairs shows on KCI include Just Today Alone, the Serena Sharp Show, of course, which precedes Talking Animals. Then at 5 p.m., we offer Planetary Radio with Matt Kaplan, followed at 5:30 by Counterspin, and that's just Monday, folks. There's great public affairs programming and talk shows like that virtually each weekday, 8 to 9 and 9 to 10 in the morning, then again from 5 to 6 in the afternoon. On the music side of the KZI schedule, I also host a show called The Dead Air Zone, Thursdays from 8 to 10 p.m. It's truly eclectic, from Afrobeat to Zydeco, that's A to Z, if are those paying attention, and everything in between. So when you have a chance, please check it out. I want to urge you to check out our website, talkinganimals.net, and when you get there, please sign up for our email list so we can alert you to guest bookings and other events and announcements. Also, I encourage you to email me with any comments, guest suggestions, ideas about show topics, songs, of course, animal songs, animal comedy bits, news stories, anything else you'd like to pass along at talkinganimals@aol.com. Really, really look forward to hearing from you. And want you, of course, to stay tuned for Jeff Scott and the Blues Disease. This is a great, great blues show here on KUCI. This has been Talking Animals on 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. And as always, we're going to close things out here with an animal-related tune. This is Grant Lee Buffalo with Soft Wolf Tread here, KCI.
Soft wolf tread, the emerald forest he was looking to make a bed. There in the spindly thicket softly did he tread. The soft wolf tread, she was scarred. And through its silver coat, its ribs shone sharply carved. And the thieves was picking weeds, sure looks dark.
Come back, he's beautiful.
And your basket full of grapes would lure you to the woods.
The soft wood trail, loud clear. Cried his name so many times that even when he yelled, no one ever came.